Today we'll hear a talk on steps 4 and 5 with an emphasis on fear and sex from Debbie D in from oh my gosh from Debbie D from Concord, California. Let's give a warm welcome for Debbie. Come on in, Debbie.
All right. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. My name is Debbie D, and I am an alcoholic. I'm coming to you all the way from Concord, California. And thank you for the invitation, Sunny, to be here today. And I can't tell you how my heart overflows, my heart cup, because of so many sponsee family members I see in here from all over the world, that it just, you know, here we are brought together through this, what appeared at one time to be a crisis, right? When we all had to go in online, and it has come to be quite the beautiful experience for all of us to connect. So I want to thank again the group for inviting me. So steps 4 and 5 regarding the fear and sex part of the inventory is what I've been tasked to share on. I'm going to do something here. Okay. So just to let you know, my experience basis is I have been sober since February 8, 1970. 76. So 47 years, 11 months, and a few weeks, 3 weeks. And that's my basis of where I'm coming from. I am actively sponsored, and I am a member of the Primary Purpose Group in Dublin, California. I know there's a Dublin, Ireland, so I'm in Dublin, California. And my first 4-step was when I was in treatment. And, you know, what do you know at 3 weeks sober or ish? You know, my depth was about the depth of a dime. You know, I really had very little skill set, ability to convey thoughts, feelings, resentments, fears, sex conduct. I didn't even know how. Finally, when I started, it was more of a storytelling. It was kind of like Pandora's box finally opened up, and I blah, 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 blah. But I had to do a 4th step and a 5th step in order to get out of there. So that was my motivation, not to get well, not to grow, not to be committed to Alcoholics Anonymous, but to get out of there. And my second one was some years later, because I'm not somebody who goes over and over and over, 1 through 12, 1 through 12, 1 through 12, because I shouldn't have a big deep inventory to do if I am living this as a way of life. So it's more about, there have been times in my recovery over these many years where I just could not shake the person, place, or thing that I was continuously disturbed on. And so, well, there are probably many people on this call who could do a better job, so to speak, than I will just give you some of my bare basics of experience on step 4. So I've probably done 5, 4 steps and 5 steps in my time. And they have all been, excuse me, at a point where there was a major shift going in my life. After that original one, the next one I took was about 7 years sober. I'd been active for 4 years. I moved. I didn't know that I had kind of walked into a room called complacency. And at 6 years sober, I started a serious sort of crash and burn. And at 6.9 years sober, while I never drank, I never stopped coming to AA meetings, I had a crash and burn that running my own life isn't working anymore. And I retook the steps. And part of that was an inventory. And in that inventory, it was about a page and a half, but I knew I had really cleaned up, got to the bottom of my barrel like I had never done before. So that, and of course, shared that with, at the time, my sponsor was a man, and he suggested I go to a priest or a monk that was also a member of AA to do the fifth step. And I got a lot out of sharing that with him. The next time I really took an inventory was when I was about 16 to 17 years sober. So my life at that time, my marriage of 5 years and 9 months would come to an end. And it was real easy to point the finger at him and the new she. But I had to remember, I got those three fingers pointing back at me. You need to take your own inventory. And while I do feel, I'm sorry, it's so helpful to do an inventory, there's a reason there are three steps in front of it. I needed to take, and I've done this with many things, sort of a mini mind inventory, sometimes written it out, but to walk through that I am powerless over this person, place, or thing, whichever I am, I just can't shake or disturb or pray away. And do I see how my life has become unmanageable by the obsession of it, perhaps? And do I believe a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, which is for me learning to take new actions, get out of the routine of the rut that I'm experiencing, and restore me to sanity and clear thinking on this? Am I willing to turn this person, place, or thing over to a power greater than me, which are many, and to there put them into his care, God's care? And then when I can do those three, then I'm ready and spiritually set to do that inventory. Now, someone has already covered the resentments for you, and I believe, I don't know if it was divine or just common sense or common feeling, but I'm so mindful or grateful they put the resentments in the very first, because most of us come in here with a whole bunch of them. It's like if there's a full water glass, two-thirds of those are resentments. Once we get that poison out, because we've got those four columns to see where, again, the big game changer for me was, where was I involved? And I did need to do that on this particular subject of my marriage, and where was I involved? And that was a icky, crappy column. Ugh. I did not want to see my role in the dissipation of that marriage. And so with that, now I'm looking at, what are those fears? What are those fears? Fear of financial insecurity, fear that, gee, I'm at the top of my physical game or looks or whatever, and you know, what if that goes to waste with just having cats and dogs in my life, right? And those kinds of fears, will I ever, you know, so when I'm walking with somebody through this part of the inventory, part of me says to them, so what's keeping you up at night? A lot of times we can maybe establish those fears in the early years, but sometimes when they come to you with 15, 20, 25 years, what's keeping you up at night? What are you worried about? And so in the fourth step in the big book, it starts on page 67 at the bottom, and it says, notice that fear is bracketed. I'm not going to go through all of it, but it reminds me that that fear, and what I saw mostly in my resentment inventory and some of the things that it affected, I didn't really feel the fear as much as the ego. It was my ego that was my driver, not my fear. And so when I looked at the setting trains in motion, motion trains of circumstances, didn't I get the ball rolling myself? And that again was an ugly question to be honest about. I could see the things that I did, not big. It was all the little teeny tinies, the little ant march, you know, that all of a sudden you got this black trail, but it only started with a couple of ants and doing things like that. There is a sentence in here that for years baffled me. And it says, sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. I, for years, did not understand. And I'm not saying that this was their meaning, but it finally dawned on me some years ago. Stealing is like robbing, taking away something from someone else. And what that fear does is it robs me from my freedom, internal spiritual freedom. It robs me from going forward. It robs me of being a full because I'm afraid of this, that, or another. And so that's what it finally made sense to me when I looked at it about class with stealing. It's taking something from me that is robbing me of the joy of living. So then it talks about putting these fears down. Okay, we list those fears, but they have no connection with the resentment. That's the difference for me, is that they may, that I'm not going back to review the resentments. I'm looking at that fear of financial security and so on and so forth. And once again, do I know where I have those? Do I know where that comes from? And again, working with others, that's the question. You may or may not know. Like I have a sponsee who is terrified of flying. Do you know where you got that? No, but I know that I don't feel that control. Okay, so the question becomes, is this a fear that you're willing to do something about? There are classes, there are things you can do. And as the result of her walking through that fear, she's been able to fly in different parts of the country without fear. So sometimes we know where they come from, sometimes we don't. We also get an opportunity to walk through them to get into the solution, the other side of them. But I need to start with what is robbing me from my freedom to, in her case, travel. Okay. We list those fears. And every time I list something, it becomes, it can seem differently because it went from here down through the arm, shoulder, pen to paper. Not a checklist item off a computer. When I write that out, I take ownership and it has a reality to it. This doesn't have a lot of reality to it. But when I put it to paper, it has a different, I get to look at it now from a different point of view, which is what this inventory to me has been its purpose. And I love the fact that we're here to play the role God plays. It signs us. The old Shakespearean, you know, metaphor. And so what, you know, some of us will be great artists or pianists or financial people. Some of us will be the best coffee maker ever, the best 12-stepper you've ever seen. And yet the two people are not one and the same. Every single person has a purpose. And we get to find out what is ours, but I've got to clear away the fear and clear away this wreckage. One of the things, again, that I love about our literature is that I can always see something new. Even though I still work out of my third edition, when I got sober, I was given a second edition. I went on a 12-step call, tried to make it a perfect 12-step call, lent him my book, never saw the 12-step call or my book again. So I said, okay, that is one suggestion in the big book I am not going to do. I'm going to bring them their own big book to do with as they will, but they're not going to get mine again, right? I was trying to do it right. And so I work out of a third edition from 1978. And it says, we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention, redirect that. Don't get focused on it, but redirect our attention to what he would have us be. I did not see that for about 25 years. I thought it said do. I'm a doer. I'm not a beer. I'm a doer. And I think that's been part of my challenge, is to become a beer, just to be. Because I do keep it going. So what would you have me be? So I began to think, confident, you know, trust and rely on God, which is what this was talking about, to pause. When I don't know what to do, the old adage, when in doubt, don't. And sometimes you don't always, well, you don't know, should I do or should I don't? Well, when in doubt, don't. Just sit there. It will come to you. And I've come to trust that and rely on that. So now about sex. Okay. One of the things that I explained to the gals, the people I work with, is this is not about the debauchery and the whipped cream and the swinging from the chandeliers. Okay, this is not what this is about. This is about my behavior, or how I really was, in how I navigated myself in relationships, the manipulation that I used with sex, and the, you know, again, I truly was one of those people that I had what you wanted and I knew you would do what you, I needed you to do to get it. So, you know, we have that from the old days, but it also followed me into the new days. I am super grateful. I got sober. I drank and got sober in a time where there were no cell phones, no Facebook, no photos. I am telling you, it wouldn't have been pretty. I am not proud nor brag about my early few years in sobriety. But the reality is, I was not the best example of a sober way of living. I got sober at 18 years old, and I do what 18 and early 20-year-old people do. And so was everyone else doing that. So I didn't stand out. But as I look back, I just shudder to think if that had been, you know, people taking videos and phones and, you know, oh my God. So what I got to do is take a look at that. And it really wasn't so much my historic, my pre-drinking sex life, as much as it was my sober behavior. That was the more embarrassing stuff than the drinking stuff. Oh, sure, you woke up with people you didn't know in places you didn't know. Yeah, no, I'm talking about the sober decisions. Those first 4 years, again, pretty embarrassing when I look back at what I did. The next few years were kind of mixed and, you know, so forth. And I'd been single till I met my first husband and we got married at 29. And again, I did not know about what to bring into a relationship. We loved each other and we love AA, and gee, isn't that enough? And the answer for us was no. And so after 5 years and 9 months, that would come to an end. As I said, I would take a look at my own inventory and I realized I know zipperino about being in a relationship. And I started dating a few people afterwards. And once again, I realized I'm getting the same thing over and over again. And yet I want a different result. I'm doing the same thing. And so I needed to make some big changes. And part of that came through that inventory at 16, 17 years sober. And that was, okay, where, you know, I did make amends for my behavior. And we wrote this all out. It talks about on page 69. And by the way, I know a lot of times we get the giggles when we say, oh, God, sex is on page 69. I know we get the giggles, but let me just tell you that in the first edition, it was on page 81. It wasn't by intent that they paginated to get it the same page, okay? So when they changed the doctor's opinion from page one to Bill's story on page one, the pagination redid, and that's how we ended up there. Okay. So my two favorite paragraphs, though, really is after we have written it down. And it says, in this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. So to me, future relationships, sane and sound. I subjected each relation to the test. Is this selfish or not? I asked God, not my neighbor, not the magazines, not what's hip today, God, to mold my ideals. Okay. And then help me to live up to them. Okay. So if I want someone who's monogamous, I need to be monogamous. If I want someone who's financially stable, I need to be financially stable. If I want someone who's active in sponsorship or the AA program, I need to be that person too. Now, our ideals at 20 are the hot guy, right? With the hot car. And at 30, they're going to look a little differently. Maybe somebody who's got a job. At 40, you're looking at somebody who's going to be a little bit more stable. They may, in my case, they got their kids done. Not, I've got my choices and kids aren't included. I mean, this, your ideals are going to change as you grow and hopefully mature. And so what your ideals are going to be would be very different possibly from mine. I went from the hot guy and the cute guy to somebody with character. In my 40s, somebody with character, somebody with foundation, someone with who's solid in the program, not the guy who's got potential. I've dated a lot of potential. They probably thought I had potential. So am I living up to those ideals? And am I willing to grow toward that? Now, I dated some guys, and I also found that, again, I had, like maybe a lot of us, the first weekend you go from 0 to 60, and then you move on in your life, and you think, gee, that was, you know, it's kind of shallow and empty. I wonder if they're going to call or whatever. And I was tired of that kind of thing, but that was on me. And so I read a couple of books that are not produced by AA or Grapevine. And there's 5 gajillion books on relationships, how-tos and when-tos and blah blahs. And I don't know exactly why I picked these two books, but they really gave me the insight I was looking for. And what I realized I needed to do was create guidelines, not boundaries. I really am, I'm not comfortable with that word. Guidelines for me. I wanted a different experience, and so therefore I need to take and do different things. So what did that look like? My ideals, again, as I said, became more someone with character, someone with, who was stable in their life. I had, had a nice relationship with their family. They, of orange and weren't glued to them. We were doing stuff with them every weekend, but had a good, loving, kind relationship. If they did have children, they were grown and gone. I mean, these were some of the things that I was looking for, but certainly someone who understood my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not a visitor. I am not simply an attender. I'm not a checklist item girl. I am all in. And not everyone is going to understand that. Not everyone is going to be okay with that. And especially if they're not in the program, my activity would be an encumbrance. I realize that. So I knew I needed someone in the program who understood that. And I also put some guidelines out for myself to protect me from doing what I'd always done. What were those? So the very first thing is I say, and shared with the gals I sponsored that I would do, is I made the commitment, I do not kiss anyone in the first 30 days. About that time, you can hear a thud. They're jaw dropping. What? Oh my God. I said, hey, I'm just telling you what I did for me. If 30 minutes is a long time for you, hey, that's progress. But I know me. I go in here and have those little physical encounters. Boom, I am up in fantasy world. I put a green bucket over every red flag that pops up. Nah. And I had to make those changes. Okay, so it's not like, hi, would you like to go out? Sure, but here's the rules. I behaved and I dressed and I spoke in a manner that conveyed how I felt about myself. I needed to behave in a manner that I wanted to be treated in. I am not someone who's looking for a quick, happy time. I don't dress that way. I don't speak that way. I don't behave that way. And so I needed to make those changes so my message was conveyed. Now, if they brought me home or we, you know, brought at the two cars and when he would go to kiss me, I would just turn my cheek. And I say, it's not personal. I just don't kiss anybody in the first 30 days. Now, here's what happens when you say something like that. Where you'll find out your integrity and theirs. Thank you. I knew, had to know that if I said that, 29 days and a special occasion is not 30. Because all of a sudden, I've just broke the very first thing I said to them. Well, I said 30, but you know, come on, it's a spec. Well, she'll do that again. She does not mean what she says. That's on me. It also tells me about them. If they try to do something before 30 days, before the next phase of our development in the relationship is to be happening, they have just disrespected me. And if they will do it now, what will that look like? So this was a huge step for me in integrity. And I couldn't have spelled integrity when I got here. But it has become a very, very important aspect of my life. So that is a little bit on that. Now, the other part I love in the few minutes, couple of minutes I have left, is on page 70. It says to sum up about sex. But this paragraph, I use the word also obsession. I've had a variety of obsessions over the years of life. Most of us do. So if I just replace the word obsession with that, this paragraph is so beautiful. It says, And I'm going to read it in first person. I'm going to do a little ad lib here. I earnestly pray for, and there's four things I pray for. I'm going to pray for the right ideal. So I've got to stop and pause and pray for the right ideal. I'm going to pray for guidance. I'm going to pray for sanity. And I'm going to pray for the strength to do the right thing. Because if this obsession is troublesome and going to cause me harm, here's my solution. I have to throw myself the harder into helping others today. Just for today. This obsession will diminish if I do these things just today. It says, I think about their needs and work for them. Get out of me, because this takes me out of myself. It quiets that imperious or overbearing urge to go with that obsession. It quiets us because when I yield to that, it means heartache. So with that, I think that's my 30 minutes. I want to thank you for your time and attention and the opportunity to share my experience. Thank you so much.